tanto buscarse, sin encontrarse. Me encierra los muros de todas partes, Barcelona.
Welcome back to the Rant and Rave podcast, a production of Rogue Machine Theater. I'm your host, Sarah Fenton. Quick reminder to get your tickets to our annual fundraising gala here in Los Angeles. We also have our online fundraising auction that is happening as well. Details for both of those things can be found at roguemachinetheater.com, where you can also find information about all the fun and exciting shows we have going on at the theater and around LA. If you've been with us this month, you know that we are bringing you stories of adventure. And here's Ron Batita to introduce our next writer.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome once again to Rogue Machine's Rant and Rave. Liz Fellman is an Emmy Award-winning writer from Brooklyn, New York. She's written for The Ellen DeGeneres Show, The Oscars, Two Broke Girls, and she hosts the very gay talk show This Just Out on YouTube. Ladies and gentlemen, Liz Feldman. This is not Liz Feldman. This is Andrew Hawtrey, who we have deputized to read Liz Feldman's piece. He's not very good, but he is game. And he has had to look at it for the last 10 minutes, so I wish him the best of luck. Ladies and gentlemen, Andrew Hawtrey.
When I was 15, I was angsty. I drew pictures of cemeteries and daggers. I wrote eviscerating poems about my parents. I was the third child, and they were phoning it in pretty hard with me. I felt like a human hangnail and wanted to get as far away from them as possible. I wanted to arrange an exchange program, but my parents said they weren't interested in hosting some foreign kid that they had to feed and keep alive. I wrote a poem about them that night called Fuckers. It was the fall of 1992 when the Spanish kids arrived in Brooklyn. They were attractive, tan, and full of life. But there was one girl who stood out for not being any of those things. She was all forehead and chin, and you almost felt bad for her, except she was kind of a creepy dick. She was like the female version of the character Ricky in Better Off Dead. This is not a good thing. Her name was Rosero. I'm guessing. That's my best guess. And she was staying with a girl on my softball team named Roxy Horroris. I'm guessing. During the time the Spanish kids were in Brooklyn, Roxy always seemed incredibly bummed. When it was time for the kids from my school to go to Almería, Spain, Roxy didn't want to go. No one could blame her, and no one could understand why I jumped at the chance to take her place. But I wanted out so bad. I didn't care that I was about to spend the next 3 weeks with a bona fide weirdo. When we arrived at the airport in Almería, we were greeted like celebrities. Almería was this small town and it was a huge deal that a bunch of Americans were coming to stay, because Americans still in that had the respect of the world in the early 90s. At the airport, Rosero, her forehead, her parents, and her little brother seemed friendly enough at first. Rosero was the only one of them who could speak any English, so we all communicated as best we could with smiles and nods as they drove me back to their small walk-up apartment. They kindly gave me the little brother's room, which wasn't really a room, just a small section of the living room that they had partitioned off with fake walls that didn't reach the ceiling. It was like being in the shower in the middle of the living room. We went into their kitchen and they offered me a ham sandwich, which they sliced from a whole baby pig with a face and eyes hanging from a hook behind the door. The mother got out a huge knife and started cutting away at the face. She put the face meat on some bread, and I choked it down as I realized I was as far away from my home as I had ever been. On my first morning, Rosiro asked me why Roxy hadn't come, and I made up an excuse about her not being able to afford the trip. But Rosiro didn't buy it, and she proceeded to punish me with silence. We walked to school, Rosiro marching ahead of me so that I was always at least a few feet behind her. She ignored me all day and refused to eat lunch with me. Instead, I ate face ham sandwiches with some cool Spanish girls named Marta and Blanca. We drank Fanta, smoked cigarettes, and talked about boys. I got a glimpse of the exchange program's good life. But when the school was out, Rosiro took me straight home, went right into her room, and locked the door. I spent the rest of my day in my living room shower because Rosiro's parents didn't want me to go out without Rosiro. I tried not to overthink it that first night. But day after day, the pattern emerged. I would follow Rosiro to school. We'd come straight home. She'd lock herself in her bedroom, and her parents wouldn't let me leave the house. They always had an excuse. It was too late. It was too dangerous. It was Tuesday. We were in a tiny city in the south of Spain. I would reason with them. I am from Brooklyn, New York. I ride the subway alone at night. I buy weed in Washington Square Park. But they wouldn't let me out, not for sightseeing or the Friday night dance, not even for museum outings chaperoned by my American teacher, Miss Sodoli, I'm guessing. Instead, I would just sit stifled in my partitioned room, which was starting to feel less like a shower and more like the cage from Silence of the Lambs where they kept Hannibal Lecter. I actually started to miss my own parents. I wanted to tell them how bad and weird things were. Finally, I was able to call home, but as soon as my parents picked up, Rosiro's mother pulled her out of her room and made her translate what I was saying to my parents. I choked back the truth and told my parents I was okay. After 10 days in their house, my Spanish had greatly improved out of fear and necessity. I started to understand the conversations Rosiro's parents were having about me, and they weren't good. I'd be in my cage and hear them talking about me. They'd call me the stupid American. They talked about what they were going to do with the money they were being paid to host me, that they planned to keep me hidden away so nothing got in the way of them receiving that cash. I was a hostage, and the ransom was $250. As soon as I could, I told Miss Sodoli that I wanted out. She said she understood. She could tell that Rosiro's family was off. But she explained that it was a big deal for them to have an American in their house, and if was removed, they would lose face. Between her forehead and her chin, Rosiro couldn't afford to lose any more face. Miss Sodoli asked me for a few days so she could plan the mission to get me out. It was around 11 in the morning on a Saturday when the call came in to the Rosaro's family. I could hear everything from my living room cage. The mother yelled, "What do you mean she wants to leave? We have been nothing but kind to her." I frantically packed my duffel bag, trying to get all my shit together, but I couldn't just run. I had only been to school and home. I was only 15. I didn't know where to go. All I knew was the news of my leaving was not being received well, and the tone in Rosiro's mother's voice was getting angrier and more emotional, to the point where she was crying and screaming. Rosiro got on the phone and said this was crazy, and whatever I said about her and her family wasn't true, that they had treated me like royalty. I could hear the mother pacing outside my cage. She yelled through the partition, "You ungrateful American bitch! I will kill you!" I thought at any second she was gonna rip my accordion cage door open and slice my face off with her pig knife. She paced and screamed, and I sat on the edge of my bed with both hands on my bag and my body frozen with shock. The mother charged into my cage. She yelled, "Tavas, Tavas!" I said, "Lo siento, lo siento!" As she yanked the door behind her. 20 minutes later, the doorbell rang. It was Miss Sodoli, along with Rosario's... Forehead's teacher, Senior Valdez. He came into my room and grabbed my bag, looking at me with pity. Miss Sodoli followed. She took my hand and led me out, shielding me from the family as they ranted about how awful I was, how spoiled. I got to the street and collapsed, bawling. Marta, one of the cool girls I had lunch with, asked her family to take me in. Her warm mother, Alma, hugged me the moment she met me in the doorway. She said she was so glad I got away from that crazy family. She fed me, laughed with me, and let me go out the very first night. After 2 weeks in Alma's house, I didn't want to leave. When it was time to board the plane to go home to New York, she pulled me close and told me that she loved me. And I walked toward the gate. And she didn't yell at me, curse my name, or call me the stupid American. She said, "You're my daughter now. Never forget." Back in New York, all my classmates' parents were there to pick up their kids, except mine. My mom had asked if my friend Laura's parents could drop me off. That was exactly the kind of thing that would have inspired deep resentment in me before my trip to Spain. But after all I'd been through, my perspective of my parents had changed. And that night I wrote another poem about them called Cabrones. That's Spanish for fuckers.
That was Liz Feldman, sort of, on adventure. Thank you so much for listening, and we'll see you next week. Rant and Rave, the podcast, is a production of Rogue Machine Theater. Our executive producers are John Polono and myself, Sarah Fenton. Our guest co-producer this month is Mary Jo Smith. Series producer is Daniel Goodman. Webmaster is Amanda Maurer. And our podcast theme music is by Heartbreak and Nadestrom. I'm Sarah Fenton. Thanks for tuning in. We'll see you next week.